Yeah, if kind of all of this kind of lines up, then we're talking about three guys who are high-end prospects who are the Cardinals' first three picks in 2020, kind of shaping up to have a reunion and also kind of this impact at the big league level. And really, it's at pretty, I mean, at young ages too.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best podcast in baseball, brought to you by Closets by Design of St. Louis. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould, joined this week, as I will be for regular appearances now, and I'm very thrilled by that. It's the one, the only, Daniel Guerrero, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch's minor league baseball writer who covers the Cardinals organization, unlike anyone else, with his daily updates and everything, and now will be appearing regularly on the best podcast in baseball. Welcome, Daniel.
Hey, it's good to have you. I feel like, obviously the best podcast in the minors, Ricardo Chapley, was a really fun time, but maybe this is a little bit, in a ways, like a promotion or like a call up to the big podcast.
Yeah, we've put you on the 40-man roster. How about that?
Right. It's a good feeling.
Yeah, no, yeah, it's good. It's good to have you. And, the podcast that you did with Carter Chapley was a great kind of insight into the minors. And one of the things that you did that like kind of branched out from BPIB was doing all the interviews with like players and stuff like that. So I hope there's going to be a way for that to continue. That's not something that BPIB has done all that much of. I guess we've had every so often the rare cameo by a player or a front office person, but you did that regularly and it was great. I'm excited too, because we're going to fold you in and have regular updates and conversations about the minors. And that's such an important thing. It also could be, I tread lightly here, an even more important thing coming out of the trade deadline, depending on the direction the Cardinals go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I obviously the farm system, I mean, especially when it comes to the St. Louis Cardinals, is everybody, I mean, every listener on here knows is one of the things that they have historically kind of built their teams on. And, obviously, that I don't think that that's news to you, I think it'll be great to kind of, shift kind of over here and continue doing that minor league style podcast right here. And obviously with your insight, I think definitely, will be great, because I mean, you've covered the organization for such a long time that, I mean, you understand, a lot of the trends and a lot of the things that we see with the farm system and with this club.
We're gonna dive into a specific topic about the minor league system, because the timing is right, and I want to get your thoughts on the futures game. The Cardinals will have two representatives there, but give me kind of your general overview of where things are with the minor league system. It seems to have some high-end potential, but also some serious lack of pitching answers. Is that a good way to kind of summarize it?
Yeah, the Cardinal system, Baseball America had him ranked, I certainly in the top 10, I think it was 8th to enter the year, and that was one of the bigger things. I mean, it's just that they had, especially when it came to the pitching, you looked at some of the names, and obviously we kind of have seen the kind of with the Cardinals in the last few years, I mean, kind of that, I guess, absence of, like a frontline starter coming out of the farm system, and somebody kind of flourishing at the major league level to do that. But you look at the way they kind of replenished that side with pitching during this last draft. I mean, the first, what was it, three picks? It was three left-handed pitchers, mm-hmm. Who have all, basically debuted this year. There are a couple guys who we came into the season in a way, kind of, as you know, like knocking on that door of maybe finding a way into a big league bullpen. And there's guys who have been kind of limited by injury and guys who have already come back, and you see them kind of coming into their own. I think Tim Kentz is one of them, who obviously we know whose timeline, to get to the majors is a little bit further away than some other pitching prospects might be within the Cardinals system. But I think when you look at there are some people who, or some players who I feel like, just when you kind of look at the strides they've made, have kind of put themselves a little bit more on the map. I think it's Max Radjic, who had a really, impressive start in Palm Beach and earned a promotion to Peoria just not too long ago is one of those guys. I mean, he was a sixth round pick, and the Cardinals, if I remember correctly, went paid over slot for him in last year's draft. And he's kind of, pushing up his, notoriety as a prospect. But I mean, when you look at some of the other guys that came into the year who are returning, Michael McGreevy is another one who just mowed down hitters in Springfield and gets up to Memphis. And, you know, he's not a big strikeout guy, and that's something he acknowledges. I mean, he's somebody who gets the ball on the ground. And even in his most recent start, he got 12 ground outs, went six Jeez. Innings, and then gave up three runs. And that's kind of what you've been seeing a lot from him in Memphis, is a guy who is going to give you five, six innings, is going to keep the ball on the ground. I think he has five quality starts with Memphis so far, and seven on the season last year. Seven on the season this year. Going back to last year, he only had eight. And you're kind of seeing that ability from him to go deeper into games. I think when you look at some of the pitching prospects, there are a couple guys, who have made a little bit of some strides. I mean, another players like Gordon Graceffo, who was limited by a shoulder injury, just recently came back and is kind of getting built up again with Memphis. And then obviously, I mean, there's some names on the position player side who, in a way, kind of, finding their footing and again this year. Mason Wynn comes to mind, especially because he had kind of a slow start to AAA, and then has batted around 280 since like the start of May. I mean, which is something he even kind of acknowledged when I went down to Memphis not too long ago, was just feeling like the game sped up on him, and now he's catching up to it. And then there are other guys in Memphis, like Yvonne Herrera is another one who is, I think, with more consistent playing time. This year, you're starting to see a lot of those strides be made. I mean, he's still just 23 years old, hitting the ball with a lot of power, creating a lot of hard contact. I think, as you mentioned, you know, the Cardinals system comes in with kind of those questions around pitching, and there are a couple guys who have taken strides, but I mean, for the most part, I think we're starting to see some of those guys kind of move that needle on their own kind of prospect stock.
There, you mentioned one of the two players picked for the futures game. Give me a run. So introduce them, first of all, who got the pick, and then kind of give me some background. You touched on Tick Hentz. The other one is Victor Scott II. What has been kind of their seasons?
A lot of speed, I guess you could say. I mean, I think Tick Hentz's was a little bit more of a waiting game. Obviously, he had some kind of a chest muscle tightness. Something that he said was just a little bit odd to him, just because it was an injury he had never really dealt with before, and something he said just kind of took some rest and a little bit of time to kind of let those issues kind of dissipate, I think is the right word, or just kind of subside, I'd say. Mm-hmm. Didn't give up a run in his first two starts. I mean, the second of his start of this year, I mean, that was the one where he exited with the injury. But then came back and kind of picked up where he left off, got built up, went deeper into games, finally earned his first career win, two starts after that, earned his second career win. He had never, completed five innings in his minor league career because of kind of the careful handling the Cardinals have had with him. Obviously, he was a guy who was drafted at high school during the pandemic, so there's no 2020 season. Obviously, 2021 still kind of weird, and he was limited on innings, and now we're seeing him kind of still get that gradual increase and kind of flourish with the innings that he's being given. And that's part of it's something that he's acknowledged too, is just knowing that, or having, or kind of wanting to be that guy who goes out there and provides, at least five innings or a quality start for his team. And that's something that he kind of had a little bit of an urge to do this year. And now that he's getting to do it, it's kind of teaching him, or kind of forcing him to pitch with the full arsenal and not just, you know, kind of go a couple of innings, blow fastballs by guys, and kind of that's it. I mean, now it's for, now he's learning, okay, the kind of like the finding that, you know, that pitchability, right? To to mix his arsenal and get through five innings and you know, effectively. And then Victor Scott, I mean, another guy, they both started down in Palm Beach. I mean, sorry, in Peoria, scratch that. They both started Peoria this year. And from the jump, I mean, Victor Scott, you know, was Peoria's everyday center fielder, batting leadoff for them, and has paced, I guess, essentially all of affiliated professional baseball and stolen bases. He's already passed the 50 stolen base mark, and it's, you know, barely the start of July, which is pretty crazy to say, just because, I mean, stolen bases, obviously we've kind of seen a little bit more of an uptick of that at the major league level, but you have a guy who has stolen 50 bases already through the first couple months of the season. I mean, it's pretty impressive.
Yeah. Yeah. He's 52 for 59, and he has almost, and he's, the race that he's on is, can he have more stolen bases than strikeouts? Right now, it's 52 steals to 57 strikeouts. That's pretty remarkable. He's got 81 hits and 30 walks, which is also pretty good. So half of the time that he's on base, he's stealing a base.
Right. And obviously you have to get on base to steal a base. I mean, there's been a couple games where this year where I think he's had multiple stolen bases. I know he's had a few, three stolen base games. And it's, I think a part of it is obviously, you know, kind of a understanding the rules, like, you know, with the pickoff limitations, with the pitch clock and kind of calculating things like that. But I think a bigger part of it is also just studying pitchers and understanding that that's his game. I mean, that's something I had a chance to speak to him earlier this year. And, you know, in going into his final season at West Virginia University, that was kind of a shift in mentality where he didn't think, I mean, he had previously thought, you know, he needed to be the guy that bats in the three hole and is going to, you know, try to hit for power and try to drive guys in and be that type of person. And then it wasn't until he played in the Northwoods League, you know, collegiate summer ball, that he realized that that was not his game, that his game was speed, that was what he was going to make kind of his bread and butter and make his style. And that transitioned into his, you know, 2020, his junior season there as a Mountaineer, and resulted in him being a fifth round pick and getting off to a pretty quick start in Palm Beach last year once he turned pro, and kind of turning that over into a selection to the Futures game in his first full season of minor league baseball.
That's a great point, that it's his first full season and he's on his way to the Futures game. What do you think their ceiling? Give me your thoughts on where they fit in the majors. I understand that, like, it's probably a long road for both of them. This is not an imminent thing. They're not going to do the Jordan Walker. They may not even do the Mason Wynn, which is, you know, he had a very impressive leap into AAA this year. Hentz is in AA, so he's made a stride already, and that's likely where he'll finish the year. But where do you see them, you know, give me best case scenario for the Cardinals, where these two fit in for the major league team and when?
Well, I mean, when it comes to Victor Scott, you see what he, you know, that just kind of like athleticism and speed and ability to hit for contact and just get on base. I mean, and also see that outfield defense in center field. And that, I mean, in the best case scenario, you're looking at a guy who, I mean, has a chance, I guess, be a leadoff hitter at the major league level. I mean, or at the very least, be a guy who can handle center field and provide speed on the base paths. And have, you know, provide that kind of aspect of the game. And we're seeing a lot of that, right? When you look around at the youngsters, even within the National League Central, it's a lot of guys who have speed. And I mean, we saw that, you know, a few weeks ago when the Reds were in town, and Ellie De La Cruz, who obviously is, you know, was one of the top prospects in baseball and is the kind of this dazzling rookie sensation. You see how fast a game can change with how fast a player can be. And you look, I mean, and I think that's one of the tools with Victor Scott, where he understands it speeds his game. I mean, other coaches I've talked to have said that, you know, that's what he is, and that's who he can be. I mean, just somebody who changes the game with his speed. And also he's also in double A. So I mean, when you kind of look at his timeline, I mean, it's still a little bit further out, but you know, he's 22 years old. So I mean, he's, you know, still young, and you know, as we kind of mentioned before, it's still his first professional season of baseball, or first season of professional baseball, I should say. So I mean, it's you know, there's still time for him. There's still, you know, a lot of at bats for him to get down in Springfield, and then you would expect eventually in Memphis, not this year, but obviously, you know, in the future. But definitely somebody who you could see playing a solid defense and providing some speed at the major league level as an outfielder. And then Tin Cans is really the interesting one, because when you look at the Cardinals' kind of track record of pitching or pitchers that they've developed and have kind of stabilized major league rotations, I mean, there's a chance that, you know, Tin Cans could be that guy, because I mean, a lot of people have just described him as kind of a special player, and the stuff he has is has been described as electric. I know this past spring he was there was a lot of praise from Ollie Marmol about Tin Cans and just what he did as a non-roster invite on the backfields, and what he did in, you know, his the few innings in the Grapefruit League that he got. And a lot of it, you know, has to do with just his stuff, right? I mean, he's a guy who's 20 years old, and I know, you know, we kind of get caught up in like, oh, you know, how fast somebody throws. But I mean, you look at the numbers, you look at the radar gun, you look at the swing and miss he's gotten down in the minors, just in his few innings, and you kind of wonder, you know, when he gets a full workload, you know, what is he going to look like? And I think we're starting to see kind of a glimpse of that already through, you know, up into the mid part of the season right now. But I mean, definitely somebody who, when you kind of, I remember, you know, Ollie kind of mentioned this during spring, that it's somebody who you kind of dream about, you know, as of what they could be at the major league level. I think there's also kind of an aspect of just kind of his personality and his poise. I mean, it's something that Tink has kind of talked about, of not getting too high, not getting too low, of staying even, of just kind of with his emotions, and like in a sense, like what we have always talked about, I guess, with Jordan Walker, of understanding, you know, how to handle pressure and how to handle, you know, kind of the trials and tribulations, and using that to, I guess, to your benefit, I guess, to become, I guess, more consistent. And it's something that's kind of I think special to him as well, from just from talking to him, just from hearing what coaches and people in the organization have had to say about him. It's Tin Cans, I mean, it has a lot of qualities that you look for in a big leaguer.
Let me present to you like a scenario, and you tell me how possible it is. Okay, so Jordan Walker, Tin Cans, and Mason Winn, they'll always be connected. Some of them played together or played against each other or saw each other as high schoolers. Mason and Tink played on the same team, you know, they're the Arkansas Sticks, and they were all drafted during 2020. And that 2020 draft is going to get a lot of attention, in part because of the high potential of the picks that Randy Flores and the Cardinals made. Jordan Walker, spring training 2023, has allowed spring training, makes the opening day roster, doesn't stick, but is now back in the majors. So here's the scenario. 2023 was Jordan Walker. 2024 is Mason Winn. 2025 is Tin Cans. Does that kind of line up? Is that how you kind of see it? That's when they all kind of arrive, and 2025 is when they're reunited and all together in the majors.
Yeah, because when you look at just kind of where Tink is at, I think especially, I think he's the one where it's like the time, obviously the timeline is a little bit further out because of the innings that are required for a pitcher, right? To kind of refine their stuff, to get the innings, to build up to get to the majors. And you look at a couple years from now, right? Like you mentioned that Tin Cans, you know, has just got to Springfield, got to double A, is supposed to make his first start this week for, you know, for the S Cards.
On
Right. So
July
I mean,
4th, right? Yeah, he's going to
right.
debut on July 4th.
So when you look at a Mason, right, where this is the year for him to just get at bats, get innings at shortstop, and just play baseball down in Memphis. And that's something that he acknowledges as his timeline, right? That's something that he understands is, you know, this is the year for him to work on things in the minors to prep for what could be, like you said, a spring training that kind of he makes his own. But yeah, when you look at 2 years from now, I think it's pretty accurate to say that spring training, 2025 could be Tink's spring, because by that time, barring any setbacks, he'll be on that track to get to the majors at that point. And we could see that, I mean, out of, was it six picks in 2020?
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, if kind of all of this kind of lines up, then we're talking about three guys who are high-end prospects who are the Cardinals' first three picks in 2020, kind of shaping up to have a reunion and also kind of this impact at the big league level. And really at young ages too, because I mean, even if that kind of lines up, we're talking about Jordan Walker still only being, because he's 21 now, so I mean, he'd still only be, what would that be? He'd be, what, 23 that spring?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Turning 24. Mason would be around 20, would be 24. And then Tink also would only be 22 years old. And you're talking about these young prospects who have kind of grown together, even though they're at separate levels. I mean, have this unique bond, this unique background, and they're going to be playing pro baseball together in kind of these, and not just playing pro baseball together, but kind of have these expectations of being these guys who are going to be, you know, kind of impact players at the big league level.
And Victor Scott's arrival could be a little bit quicker, in part because he could be one of those specialist kind of guys, right? He's got the speed and the daring do to go out and steal, and that is somebody that teams who are in contention sometimes add late if they need somebody to steal a base, which I think is fascinating.
Yeah, I think, and obviously you've seen that before with guys who kind of come up, obviously from the countless seasons that you've covered baseball. I mean, but he's definitely that profiles as that person too, where just those tools, right, with the defense and speed were so valuable for a team down the stretch. And I think given enough at bats, we'll kind of see more of, you know, who Victor Scott can be offensively. But you look at those two aspects with the speed and defense, and it's really just kind of these things that the defense and speed combo is so valuable to a team, especially when times get, games get tight and you need somebody who you can rely on in the outfield, and somebody who, you know, if you need to take a base, somebody who's, you know, you like their odds of being able to advance a base and when,
right,
in crunch time.
To have the Dave Roberts move, like, you got to have a base. You need the guy. Mm-hmm. This is an absolute must. Here he is. Do you want to have some? You want to have some fun with numbers, Daniel? Do you want to have some statistical alchemy here, if you will? We'll spin some stats into gold. So Victor Scott, the second, has a .284 average, a .366 on base percentage, which is super strong. Obviously, takes his walks. And has a .393 slugging percentage, which puts him at a .759 OPS. You know, .759 OPS, fine, you know, solid, especially with all those steals and stuff for a center fielder. You know, is that ideal? Probably not in the current game. You'd probably like to see a few more doubles there, for example, right? Mm-hmm. Some kind of damage there. But here's the fun with numbers. If you count the steals, like the bases he's taking as part of his total base count, you know, because, hey, those are bases that he's earning. He's not getting them with a swing, but he's getting them with his legs, which is, you know, what's the difference between Tommy Edman legging out a double with his speed, or Lars Nootbaar, as he did the other day, taking a double by being aggressive on the bases. He gets credit for that in his slugging percentage. So let's give Victor Scott the second credit for his steals and his slugging percentage. If you add those 52 stolen bases to his total base count and then calculate his slugging, it goes from 393 to 575. And that, my friend, is Damage. Mm-hmm. That's, I know it's like, it's not, it's fun. But it also is illustrative. Like, there are more ways to take 90 feet than to do it with the bat. And if he's out there doing that, oof, I mean, 575, that all of a sudden, you know, you're talking about a 950 or 960 plus OPS, which is just, I mean, that's earth shaking, right? Like, that puts a whole new perspective on what he's doing.
I think sometimes we do get caught up in kind of the fancy numbers, right? So, I mean, like, and that's a really good point where it's like, you know, the OPS is what it is now. Doesn't really jump off the page. I mean, obviously the on-base percentage is something that, like you mentioned, is solid, but slugging, I mean, that, you know, doesn't really kind of catch your attention. But in a game of adjustments, in a game of trying to find ways and trying to do the little things right to get an advantage, the stolen base, the stolen base, and somebody who steals bases like that with great success and has that capability, I mean, you can't overlook that. I mean, and you can't overlook how that can influence a game. I mean, and there's been times this year where, I mean, he's stolen multiple bases. He's stolen, you know, two bases in the same inning, essentially, and kind of really kind of helped put Peoria on the board with just his legs. And that's something that, you know, might not, I think with some advanced stats, you probably shows up in the box score. That's not some, I mean, sometimes, you know, we don't see a whole lot of those fancy numbers with minor leaguers, but you just kind of look at what he does. You look at what he does when he legs out an infield single. The value can kind of get overlooked by just kind of those finishing numbers, right? So I mean, you're right. I mean, in the sense of you translate those over and you kind of add them to slugging percentage, and now you have this guy with you know, an OPS above 900, which is insanely impressive.
The Futures game comes up on Saturday, Daniel, and you got the two representatives from the Cardinals, which is twice as many representatives as they'll have in the All-Star game a few days later, as it turns out. The question I wanted to ask you is, were there other candidates you thought might get picked for the Futures game? Other Cardinal minor leaguers, other Cardinal prospects that you thought were deserving, maybe, or at least might get a look into the on the Futures game stage?
I think there were a couple, but I mean, I think there were a couple guys down kind of in the lower minor leagues that stood out early on this year. I know Max Ragic was one that I mentioned, and he, you know, had an ERA below two through like his first 10 starts with Palm Beach. That was somebody who I understand, you know, it's kind of down, you know, a little bit on the lower level, and, you know, low A is still kind of a level where you're still kind of, where guys are still just kind of finding your routine and getting a sense of pitching in the, in professional, or playing just professional baseball. And, you know, it's still a little bit different to kind of project who a guy can be and kind of what he does. But I felt like just his performance was something that was really interesting in that possibility. I think Juan Bin Cho is another one who had a slow start to the season, and then in the last 2 months has just gotten on base, just has been an on-base machine and is just hitting like crazy. I mean, and really essentially went from batting under 200 to batting close to I think like 280, 290 at this point, just with what he's done through, what he did through May and June. But also, you know, another guy who's still just 19 down kind of in low way, or like I said, I mean, it's kind of hard to project what somebody can be. But I mean, when it comes to guys who have really stood out this year, I think it, I think Tim Kent and Victor Scott are definitely right. I mean, have rightfully earned that spot in the Futures game. And that's not to say that nobody else has, but I think when you look at guys who you know, you can showcase as kind of unique talents, I think they definitely fit that mold, right?
Good point.
With speed, with what Tink does on the mound and what Victor does on the base paths. But yeah, I think there are certainly guys who, you know, you could have made a case for when it comes to getting to the Futures game. But I mean, yeah, I think when you look at kind of Tua has kind of really stood out this year. And within the Cardinals system, these are two unique talents who, you know, have an opportunity to showcase, you know, what they can do. And I mean, I remember, you know, just look at last year, right, where you had another kind of aspect of speed with the throwing arm from shortstop with the Cardinals in the Futures game, and what Mason Wynn does there. And now, I mean, it's kind of I think in a way where it feels like a little symbolic, I guess, in a way where it's like Jordan Walker and Mason Wynn kind of moved through the system together until Jordan, you know, really just leapfrogged AAA and obviously went back and then came back to the majors and is hitting like crazy as well. But when you look at kind of Jordan and Mason moving through the system together and getting that Futures game, and now you have Tin Kans, who has always been behind him because of his timeline, is now getting his chance to do something in the Futures game, which I guess in a way kind of speaks to the paths that they've all had to the majors, or their paths that they've all had through pro baseball.
And that it's been under the spotlight. I mean, like that they are talents, but also, you know, it comes with some expectations, and they certainly have been, they have been positioned in ways to get attention for their growth. I was a little surprised Ivan Herrera wasn't picked.
So that's one of them. I don't know if we've seen a guy who has debuted in the majors still playing the Futures game. So I don't know if what the what the criteria is for, you know, well, I mean, he was already in the majors. So I'm not. When you look at what he's done, just with his offense, right? I mean, his same thing has an OPS above 900. I want to say it's above 950. At this point, I think it's getting close to 1,000. I mean, I know certainly that. I mean, but when you look at just the hard contact he's producing, when you look at, I mean, just this weekend, right? He hit a homer 443 feet. He's batting above, I think he's batting close to 300, and really has been kind of that heart of the order for Memphis in driving in runs and hitting a ton of doubles. I mean, he only had 10 doubles last year and he's already had 20 this year. Part of that obviously comes with the playing time, because I think he only played in 68 AAA games last year and he's already played in 50. I mean, when you look at what he's done offensively and the strides that he's made, it feels like almost like day and night from where he was at last year, just because, you know, he wasn't playing a whole lot in Memphis, you know, kind of has gets a call up to the majors, and is kind of thrown into this spot. Obviously, the Cardinals have this kind of situation at catching, obviously, with Yadier Molina out for such a long time. And you have this 22-year-old catching prospect who had been kind of like projected, I guess, to be the future after Molina, right? I mean, as we all kind of, well, I mean, that was, you know, obviously part of that question of, you know, what does the future of catching look like for the Cardinals after Yadier Molina retires? And
right.
And you have, you know, somebody who was, you know, top catching prospect in the system, kind of put into the spot, I mean, with not a whole lot of seasoning, I guess, in AAA. And now you're seeing him get the opportunities, get the playing time, and, you know, just find his routine, find the consistency that he needs to, and show that, you know, that he can kind of, I guess, push that prospect ceiling up a little bit because of what he's done offensively, especially. I mean,
Got it. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's something that, I mean, even with like the hard contact, I remember talking to him in spring, and I know like, I see it in the comments of people who say like, oh, well, I mean, who cares about exit velo, this and that. I mean, but I mean, it, I think it kind of tells, you know, just kind of, I mean, I think it's an interesting stat just because hard hit rate is, I think, important at the major league level for any hitter. Right. But I mean, when talking to him in spring, I mean, that he had never hit a ball with an exit velocity, from what he told me, had never hit a ball with an exit velocity above 110. And in spring, you know, he had seen 113 a few times, and we're seeing that translate into the season. Now that we have StatCast data available because of, you know, all the changes with the ABS system being implemented down in AAA, and we're able to see, you know, that stuff more on a regular basis. And man, you watch the games and you see the hard contact, and then you look at the numbers and it's like, man, like, he really got a hold of that one. Even when it's with hard outs. But I mean, you look at what he's done. Yeah. When you look at what he's done to just be a consistent bat. I mean, and it's definitely a change and something that, you know, does. I mean, that would have been an interesting kind of call, right? I mean, somebody who had already played in the majors.
You make a great point
being,
there.
Being in the futures game. But I mean, when you look at guys who, same thing, have performed at a high level and kind of have that potential to showcase that in a setting like the futures game, I mean, he certainly would have fit the mold.
Right after the futures game, then comes the draft. They've tied the draft to the All-Star game and the All-Star festivities, much to the chagrin of all 30 teams who are already spent working on the trade deadline. So they have a lot of stuff going on all at once. The Cardinals draft 21st overall, and then they do not draft again until, I think, late July, it seems like. They have only one pick in the first 89 because they gave up the pick to get Wilson Contreras. The Cubs got the 68th overall pick as compensation for the Cardinals signing Wilson Contreras. So that there they are. I want to ask you, as we close up here, just to kind of look back on a couple drafts. First, last year's first overall pick, Cooper Jerpy. What's his progress been like in his first full season?
Well, I mean, it's been kind of halted just because he's been out for for a pretty decent amount of time with injury. I mean, but before he went down, there was a lot of struggles with just, I think, limiting walks and just finding the strike zone. I had a chance to talk to him. I mean, and after, you know, his first couple pro starts, and he acknowledged that it was just not trying. The way he put it was like not trying to be too nasty, which I thought was kind of a interesting. I mean, because this is a guy who, in his final season at Oregon State University, you know, struck out, I think, 161 batters and, you know, in over 100 innings. I mean, high strikeout guy, didn't walk a whole lot. And there was a lot of times this year where just fell behind in counts, had given up. I think he gave up 8 home runs and his first eight starts before he went to the IL. But there was a lot of times where, I mean, he even said that, you know, he kind of put himself into counts where, you know, he just kind of had, you know, had to throw a strike and ended up in a home run. And I think we saw a little bit of that change really in the few starts before he got hurt. I mean, I think he had only given up like 4 runs in like 23 innings. He had given up 12 in 16, I guess, to start the year. We saw kind of that high strikeout kind of profile pitcher show up early in the season too. I mean, that there weren't a lack of strikeouts. I think it was just a big part of finding the zone and trying to limit walks for him. Mm-hmm. But I mean, when you saw just some of the stuff, right? I mean, you saw that slider and just kind of that, you know, that kind of in the way with his delivery. I mean, it definitely is something that really baffled a lot of hitters down in high A. I mean, before he kind of had that progress kind of put on pause, I mean, he had kind of started to show that, you know, this is the first round talent that the Cardinals selected last year, you know, was kind of what he was kind of projected to be, somebody who could get a lot of somebody who could kind of compile strikeouts. I think we were still kind of seeing him trend in that direction of somebody who was going to kind of go deeper into games. But obviously when he comes back, it'll be kind of a rebuild for him to get back up to being able to go to kind of give distance.
Sure. The other thing I wanted to close off with here is kind of back where we started, and that's the 2020 draft. It was, it was an interesting draft, limited scouting because of COVID. You know, everything kind of stopped right there in March, including scouts being able to go out. There was a lot of stuff on video. There was obviously a lot of analytics because there always is. There were interviews that could happen, but they weren't in person, right? Mm-hmm. I want to just kind of get a quick take on where the Cardinals, and by doing so, we'll revisit their picks just in case people don't remember. But where each of these picks are, it's a limited draft. Mm-hmm. The Cardinals reached for high ceiling. You know, they're not going to do Yahtzee on it. They're not going to get every one of these guys to the majors. There for a moment, it was like, maybe that's possible. That's not going to happen. But, you know, in visiting it, we kind of see how much of the the team the Cardinals want to be in the next few years, mm-hmm. it's really related to this 2020 draft. So let's go 21st overall, Jordan Walker. Everybody knows where he is. He's playing in the majors. He has two hit streaks of 12 or more games. He's been in a lot of ways one of the more consistent hitters, despite that dip back to AAA. All around, he's been what is expected, right? More is expected from him. More power, middle order hitter, all that stuff. But I think this is going better than the Cardinals could have hoped. Do you agree?
Yeah, I mean, when you see the kind of the immediate production for Jordan Walker at the big league level, yeah. It lines up with what kind of the hope was, right?
And then 54th overall, Mason Wynn, we've talked about him, AAA shortstop, strong spring training. You mentioned how he started slow because of the speed of the game and now has started to take off. Every indication is that by next spring training, he's going to be competing for a job in the majors that could be competing with Tommy Edman for a starting spot at shortstop. That could be, if the Cardinals elect to bring back Paul DeJong on his option, that could be competing with him. Anyway, he is going to be part of the conversation in spring. 63rd overall, Tink Hentz. We've spent a lot of time talking about him. 70th overall was Alec Burleson, who's in the majors, is chugging along and could spend the full season here as a left-handed bat. Recently made his pitching debut. Not exactly why he's in the majors. Not exactly the two-way player that the Cardinals expected from this draft, but there it is. Burleson provides some left-handed bat-to-ball talent. Very difficult guy to strike out with off-speed pitches, and has kind of brought a compliment. What's your view, having seen a lot of him in the majors? What's your view of kind of his upside? Is he going to be a left-handed DH if Jordan Walker is in the outfield every day? Is Burleson gonna force something else?
I mean, I think Burleson certainly has that possibility. Because when you look at what he did over the course of an entire season in Memphis, I mean, this is a guy who was one of the most consistent hitters, not just in the International League or AAA, but really in all of minor league baseball. Got his call to the majors, and just kind of was depth at the major league level as the Cardinals, went into the playoffs. And you look at this year, I think part of it is also, I mean, we haven't really seen a whole lot of Alec Burleson. I mean, just because mm-hmm. the at-bats have been kind of, far in between. But I mean, I certainly think there is that capability, just because you're seeing a lot of kind of the, some of the things that you'd seen down in Memphis. I mean, somebody who could give you a quality at bat, like you said, somebody who, when it comes to breaking balls, could kind of battle and is going to get the ball in play. And I think we've seen a little bit of that. And I think just when, like you said, I mean, if Jordan Walker, is going to be your everyday corner outfielder, and there's those at bats at DH, I mean, that's certainly a possibility for Burleson. I think the makeup is there for him to be that, as a left-handed mm-hmm. hitting DH.
And then now we get into some of the guys who are not yet in the majors, and the final three picks that the Cardinals made in that draft. Third round, 93rd overall, Levi Prater out of Oklahoma. He's been released. He struggled as a pro, was a top 200 draft talent coming in, but just really never had the results, did not move up, and was released actually after this spring. Had a very difficult spring on the backfield.
Yeah, so when it comes to Prater, I mean, when you looked at what he did, really, actually in 2021, I remember kind of when I was kind of familiarizing myself with the farm system, he had struck out, and I'm pulling this up right now to make sure I have it right, but he had 104 strikeouts and 68 in the third innings in 2021, and the ERA wasn't, great, but the strikeout rate was there. And then last year, just didn't get a whole lot of innings, was used mainly in relief. And like you said, just the struggles on the backfield. He just kind of had never really kind of or was able to piece things together, and, just couldn't find his footing within the Cardinals system. So, but I mean, there certainly was some of that. I think there certainly was some intrigue, especially with kind of his high strikeout success a couple years ago.
fourth round pick, Ian Bedell out of Mizzou, 122nd overall. He is back from surgery, and how is mm-hmm. he doing?
Starting, which is allowing him to get more innings and get more consistency. I mean, that was really kind of his big thing coming into this year, where he had less than I think 10 innings under his he had pitched less than 10 innings in his first two seasons of pro baseball, just because like everybody else in the draft came into it during the pandemic, started his pro career in Peoria and high A, and elbow issues and led to Tommy John surgery, came back last year and was originally expected to make his return in sort of late May, and then first bullpen session back, you know, kind of felt another kind of things, kind of felt issues in his forearm, pushed everything back. He didn't come back until I think September or late in the season, and had a few innings with Palm Beach and kind of started to look a little bit more effective. He started to look effective, and then the innings were kind of managed for him. And now this year he comes into the 2023 season, gets off to a really strong start out of the bullpen, was really a long relief guy for Peoria, had a high had a pretty good strikeout rate. And then once injuries hit actually to Peoria's rotation, Tank Kent was sidelined a little bit, same thing with Cooper Jerpy, then you'd have Ian Bedell slide into a starting role and really start to get built up to the starter's workload. I mean, his last couple starts, I know he had reached a 5 innings. Same thing. I mean, he's done shown the ability to you know, face a lineup, you know, a couple times through and mm-hmm. and give you a quality start. It's it seems like a long time coming, just because really in what is his what would it be, third year as a professional baseball player is essentially kind of like his first year playing mm-hmm. because
yeah
the injuries delayed him so much that now we're really starting to see him kind of get that development, just because he was sidelined for so long. But I mean, yeah, it's kind of been a long road for him, but now he's kind of seen that, just kind of going through that development that really was supposed to start back in 2021.
And then the fifth round pick, 152nd overall, you talk about mm-hmm. not having a whole lot of baseball time. He certainly fits in that. It's LJ Jones, the fourth, an outfielder. In 2019 and 2020 for Long Beach State, he played a total of 16 games. So two seasons of college and very mm-hmm. limited amount of games, and very limited information for the Cardinals to draw from. But a power guy, had just real standout potential power. And how's he doing?
Yeah. So this might sound a little, misleading, but so LJ Jones is actually the Cardinals prospect I have seen the longest, I guess. So I had mm-hmm. to look this up. So when I was at SDS of San Diego State covering baseball for the school paper, covering SDSU's baseball team for the school paper, right? There was a Tuesday mm-hmm. night game against Long Beach State. And I remember thinking, once I, you know, kind of familiarized myself with LJ Jones, LJ Jones the fourth, I had to look back. And actually, he played in that game that I covered in 2019, which is kind of funny. So,
well, he didn't play in many. So how about that?
Yeah, right. So, I mean, if I could draw comparisons back to his 2019 season as a dirtbag, but no, I'm just kidding. But yeah, but LJ Jones, I mean,
we need to clarify that that's the nickname of the Long Beach State baseball team.
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah. They're called the Long Beach State Dirtbags. That's the name specifically for the baseball team.
For the baseball team. Everybody else, they are the Sharks.
Right. Naturally.
But yeah, so I mean, when you look at what he did last year, I mean, he was spent the whole year at Peoria. In high A, and really was our offensive leader in a lot of categories. I know he had over 30 doubles. He had batted around like 260. So, I mean, you saw some of the kind of the, I guess, those glimpses, right? And I know you've mentioned this before, where a lot of with prospects, I mean, doubles are an interesting stat, because as players grow and they develop and get stronger and become more seasoned hitters, sometimes those doubles turn into homers. So, I mean, 33 doubles, that was, I think Mason Wynn led the organization last year with 36. So, I mean, LJ Jones was not too far off from from kind of pacing the Cardinals system, or, you know, keeping up with the guys who, you know, hit the top of that. And he comes into this year, starts the season with Springfield. I know during spring he elected to, he was originally going to play for Team Panama during the World Baseball Classic, but elected to forego that and stay in spring just because he wanted to focus on just kind of staying in camp and using that, obviously, for his to go into the season. I remember talking to him, and it's one of those things where once he kind of saw that Team Panama was playing in the pool that they were playing in was, you know, was located in Taiwan, and just the travel and all that, I mean, he felt like it was better for him to stay in camp. And actually staying in camp, you know, he was able to work on some things with some of the hitting, the minor league coaching staff to kind of work on his swing. And we're kind of seeing, we still haven't really seen a whole lot of those results yet. I mean, he's batting around like 210 in Springfield. Mm-hmm. He hasn't played as often, you know, he hasn't been really an everyday player, but I think, like you said, I mean, when you talk about somebody who hasn't gotten a whole lot of playing time just recently, I mean, he's kind of in that boat too. I know he's played a little bit of first base, as well as, you know, being a corner outfielder and a DH. So, I mean, there's, I think there are ways that he's been able to get into games, but I think we're still, I guess, waiting to see, you know, if those kind of that power that, if that power can kind of show up and be, and if it'll be consistent for him, certainly in Double A where he's at right now.
It's really interesting looking at that 2020 draft. You know, the Cardinals obviously won't go Yahtzee, but they could get 4 out of 6, maybe 5 out of 6 from that draft class into the majors, which, given all the context of that draft class, and especially if they get 3 impact players, that would be rather remarkable for Randy Flores and his group, but it won't be clear until the future. Daniel, welcome to the BPIB lineup. I know you've been on here before. I'm very excited to have you as a regular contributor. We're going to have you on to talk about the minors regularly here. And the next time will be all about the trade deadline. I want to get your thoughts on whether or not the Cardinals have some talent tokens to use in ways to improve, well, probably improve the 2024 team. That's probably what they ought to be looking for, unless they put something together. Daniel, thank you very much for joining me. This has been a pleasure to talk with you.
Yeah, Derek, thanks for having me.
The Best Podcast in Baseball is brought to you by Closet by Design of St. Louis. You can find The Best Podcast in Baseball anywhere you get your podcasts. It's available on iTunes, where you can rate and review the podcast. I do check out those reviews, trying to find ways to improve the podcast. You can also subscribe to the podcast. Subscriptions make the sponsorships possible, and sponsorships make the podcast possible. The Best Podcast in Baseball is part of the Galaxy of Cardinals coverage, the constant Cardinals coverage, available at stltoday.com and in the pages of the Post-Dispatch. That is, of course, where you can find Daniel Guerrero's coverage of the minor league Cardinals organization, and also his contribution to the major league game coverage, where Lynn Worthy and I are also, well, we type a lot. So look for it there. Lynn Worthy has a chat going. I'll be off in Seattle all weekend and next week for the All-Star festivities. That means The Best Podcast in Baseball will come to you from there, the Pacific Northwest and All-Star Game Week. For baseball writer Daniel Guerrero, I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould. This has been The Best Podcast in Baseball. Talk to you soon.
Imagine summer concerts with the artists you're dying to see. The ones with lines around the block. They're coming to Iowa. When you play and enter Wild Cherry Scratch tickets from the Iowa Lottery, you can win the hottest ticket in town with the Summer of Music Tour. You could see Eric Church, Jason Aldean, or even New Kids on the Block at the Iowa State Fair. Just enter and see details at ialottery.com/VIP to win.